Greek workers are still unhappy about budget cuts, while European leaders make sure the banks there have enough cash.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective on business and economics. In Athens today, airline flights are grounded, transit has been hampered big time, and schools have been shut down. Thousands of public workers protesting big government budget cuts outside the parliament today are chanting, "The rich must pay." Meanwhile, the Financial Times today reports the massive Greek debt has European finance ministers looking for ways to shore up some of the biggest banks there, banks that are exposed to bad sovereign debt. Reporter Caitlin Carroll has more from Berlin.
European governments are feeling a sense of urgency to strengthen the capital position of the banks. Jobst Fiedler is a professor of public and financial management at the Hertie School of Governance in Berlin. He says those banks in a weakened position would fail.
It's like in the African desert. That animal which is limping is caught first. That means not only the shareholders would devalue the bank, but those who have deposits would have a run on those banks.
Fiedler says in order for European governments to coordinate efforts to support the banks, there needs to be greater clarity on the financial system of those banks. The other thing that needs to change is more action, less talking.
In the U.S., you had not really large hesitations to capitalize one of your endangered banks after the Lehman crisis. In Europe, in some countries, it still has to be overcome that the state has to directly intervene, becoming bank shareholders.
And convincing a bailout-weary public that the banks deserve help may be the toughest hurdle of all. In Berlin, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are mixed at the moment. Europe is up more than 1% on average, actually 2 and 3% in some cases. Asian markets were lower today, though. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow tacked on 153 points, about 1.5% to close at 10,808. The U.S. Justice Department and New York Attorney General's Office, they're suing Bank of New York Mellon, claiming the bank cheated pension funds for a decade and made off with more than $2 billion. Marketplace's Gregory Warner is with us live this morning to talk about it. Morning, Gregory.
Good morning.
So what is Bank of New York really accused of doing here?
They are being accused of tricking their institutional clients on foreign currency transactions. Alleged victims include the state of Mexico, New York, YMCA, pension funds at Duke University, Walt Disney, others. So these investors all gave their money to Bank of New York Mellon to make currency trades on their behalf. The question is pricing. The suit alleges that the bank, when it made those trades for its clients, routinely chose the very worst price of the trading day, and then it obtained more favorable prices for its own trades that day and pocketed the difference. That difference, as you said, added up to $2 billion over a decade.
What is Bank of New York saying? How are they responding to this?
Well, Bank of New York, in a statement, vigorously denied wrongdoing. I phoned up a few bankers about this morning. Nobody agreed to talk on the record about an existing lawsuit, but they told me, look, on the one hand, of course, you expect a bank to get the best price for its clients, but unless the agreement spells out exactly how a trade has to be executed, then it's going to be up to the currency traders, and they're going to manage their books, no surprise, for their own profit. And that may not be fair, but does it break the law? That's what the case will come down to.
All right. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reporting for us this morning. Gregory, thanks.
Thanks.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, insuring more than 80 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com. By Novo Nordisk, since 1923, combining drug discovery with technology to turn science into diabetes treatments at NovoNordisk-US.com. And by Reputation.com, helping small business owners, professionals, and executives monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. Reputation.com.
There's a hearing today at the House Ways and Means Committee looking at free trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. Congress is expected to vote on those agreements within the next couple of weeks. So we wondered, how exactly does a trade deal with, say, Panama, actually create American jobs? From Washington, here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The agreement will make it easier for Panama to send fruit and textiles to the U.S. We'll sell Panama more heavy machinery to expand the Panama Canal. Economist Jeff Schott is with the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
Many major U.S. equipment manufacturers have the opportunity for tremendous new business if they can get in and compete on a level playing field.
The trade agreement phases out tariffs, making all U.S. goods cheaper in Panama. The International Trade Commission estimates that U.S. rice exports to Panama will more than double. This all sounds great, but how many U.S. jobs would this deal actually create? Robert Pastor teaches international relations at American University. He says the U.S. exports so little to Panama that even tripling rice exports wouldn't mean much.
In 2010, we exported more than 40 times more to Mexico than to Panama.
And Pastor says Panama exports so little to us, it won't cost many U.S. jobs. So why bother with Panama? Meredith Broadbent is a trade policy analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She says we can't ignore even small countries because our competitors are cutting favorable agreements with them.
And it's resulting in a bit of a spaghetti bowl of overlapping free trade agreements. But it's a system that we do need to be a part of rather than sitting back from and trying to sell to the 5% of consumers that live in the United States.
Broadbent says it's a big world out there, and we need to sell wherever we can. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, it was Election Day yesterday in West Virginia, and for the first time since 1863, residents were able to buy alcohol in stores. Well, up until Tuesday, that was a big no-no because of old concerns politicians would try to sway voters with booze. The state legislature rescinded the 148-year-old law earlier this year, marking the first time West Virginians have had the opportunity to drink before they found out who won. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Ah, college days. Freedom, exploration, discovery, and this too.
I was eligible for every grant in the book, every loan. Still came out with $30,000 in debt.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. One solution? A bachelor's degree for less than $10,000. The story next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.